I'm Josh Cooperman, and this is Convo by Design with designer, showroom owner, and furniture maker Leslie Shapiro-Joyle. I met Leslie at the Waddles Mansion Showcase House a few years ago. When talking with designers at showcase houses, much of the topic of conversation is the house itself. Understandably so, because the goal is to learn all about the space before it's gone. For quite some time, I've been wanting to circle back with Leslie to talk about her design, the showroom that she owns and operates, and her furniture that she makes. We met at the Pacific Design Center a while back and had the chance to get caught up. In addition to the business, we spoke about reality shows and her experience on Ellen's Design Challenge. It was a learning experience for Leslie, and you're going to hear why. Before we get into this conversation, I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and invite you to join in the conversation. You can find us at Convo by Design on Twitter and at Convo by Design, this time with an X, on Facebook and Instagram. You can also find videos from these same conversations on our YouTube channel. And again, search Convo by Design and you'll find over 130 videos from some of your favorite guests, including the following. If you like the show, please send it to a friend so they can join our design community. You can also subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show. Convo by Design is presented by Snyder Diamond and has been since episode number one. Snyder Diamond is always first with what's next in the kitchen and bath. That's the philosophy of second-generation president Russ Diamond. He travels the world looking for the appliances, fixtures, and finishes for the kitchen and bath that allow designers and architects to create amazing spaces for their clients. Products like those from Miele. I recently toured the Miele showroom and was stunned, really, by all of the amazing products that Miele has to offer, from coffee machines to ovens, ranges, hoods, combi steam ovens, washers, dryers, dishwashers, all made with that Immer Besser philosophy hard-coded into the very DNA of this family-owned and operated company since their founding in 1899. Miele products are made to serve and built to last. They possess the form and function you expect, and they were created with the future in mind. The technology integrated into these appliances, remarkable, and they were designed to work seamlessly together, all to make life that much easier. Now, combine this world-class product with the standard bearer in customer service. Snyder Diamond Service is here for you, and you have a powerful partnership. Find out more at any of the three Los Angeles area Snyder Diamond showrooms and check out some fantastic limited time offers and promotions from Miele while you're there. You can also learn more at SnyderDiamond.com.
All right, good.
Now's when I belt out my Whitney.
Leslie.
My Whitney single.
Shapiro. Joyle.
Hi.
Whitney, go.
I don't know any.
Oh, you're not going to do it?
No,
okay.
Sorry.
All right.
Yeah, that's
all right.
It wasn't real. The greatest love of them all.
I love that.
Something like that, right? Yeah.
I love that. So. Okay. There we go. So congratulations.
On?
We're getting ready to talk, and you come in, and we're talking about your new project.
Yeah.
That you weren't just in Sunset. You got the cover.
We got the cover.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How'd that happen?
Super nice surprise. Pretty work, I guess, that kind of fit the bill. And then two dogs in the photo, which always helps.
Your dogs?
Not my dogs. You're the clients' dogs.
Clients' dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
LA is a big dog rescue place.
Were they rescues?
They were.
That's great.
Yeah.
Where's the project? How did it come together? How long were you working on it? Tell me about this project.
Let's see. Project is in Whitley Heights, which is a historical part of Hollywood Hills, developed, I guess, in the teens and the 20s, sort of just the beautiful terraced part of Hollywood Hills. And I started that project. I met the clients. They came into the showroom. We did some lovely furniture for them. And then they asked me to be part of the project. And they went house hunting. And it's probably the first house that they saw. They're just super lucky, wonderful people. They saw this house. They bought this house. And we decided to gut and remodel the house. It took about somewhere between 15 and 18 months to do. 1923 or 1926, just gorgeous Spanish revival at the top of, you know, Whitley Heights with all the stairs and tons of romance. Absolutely lovely area. And the house had gone through some remodeling evolutions. I kind of call it the Houdini effect, sort of magic castle, you know, dark, Transylvanian, just fine, but we wanted something a little lighter and brighter, and so we took all of the big Gothic fireplaces and motifs out of there. It was dark and dated, you know, heavy drapes, heavy stone, heavy fireplaces. Very Batman would have been very happy there. But I mean, the bones were good. How can you go wrong with a home in Hollywood Hills, you know? So we just sort of gutted everything, and the clients were incredible to work with. They trusted me and my vision, and we just sort of got right to work. And there was an enclosed patio that was so wonderful. It had a tree, it had a big cedar going right through the roof on purpose, and I loved it, but it was dilapidated and it had to go, and we discovered termite damage, and so really we just needed a whole exterior overhaul. So we looked at different companies and ultimately chose Terremoto Landscape, which is a Los Angeles firm, young firm, wonderful firm, and they designed and completed the exterior beautifully, and Sunset Magazine came in and shot it, and I found out yesterday that it made the cover.
That's so awesome. Okay, so two questions going through this. The first is really interesting. So the clients found you prior to finding the property.
Yes, I did some furniture for them. They found me. I have a studio on Fairfax. I do furniture design, and the clients actually bought some furniture from me. And so we went through kind of the custom process. I developed some pieces for them. We all got to know each other and liked working together very much. And, you know, they were in a nice little apartment here in LA. And then they started house hunting and said, would you like to come in and be part of the design of the house when and if we get one? And I said, absolutely. Yeah.
When did you start making furniture?
Started making furniture, I think my first piece was in 1994. I used to dream of furniture. I don't know why I loved, I had this vision of being in a loft somewhere with nothing in it except orphan chairs, you know, that I would find on the street or that someone would give to me, and I would roller skate around the loft and just sort of, I know I'm wacky, but I would just go from chair to chair. I loved collecting chairs, and kind of the funkier the better.
Do you know what I'm thinking of when you say that?
No.
Xanadu. Do you remember the movie Xanadu with Olivia?
I sort of kind of Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Forget I brought that up.
When I think of me, I don't think of Xanadu.
No, because there's a scene in there where
she do that
roller skating around a loft.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Around the furniture.
Maybe I had seen it.
Okay.
Or maybe they got in there. They infiltrated. I had to get rid of my chair collection when I met my husband, because I had them everywhere. I had chairs everywhere. I had storage units with chairs that were hanging from bungee cords, and they were...
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah, it was taking over.
So, backing up a minute, because I want to get back to the furniture thing, but first I want to stay on point here with regard to Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Who found who? Did they call you? Did you call them? When you have a project, who made the connection between the project and Sunset Magazine?
Oh, I think that it was probably the landscape designers.
Oh, okay.
Since Sunset is home and garden.
Yeah.
the landscaping that was done at this home was extraordinary. And so the landscape designers, I guess they had a contact at Sunset, and they featured the gardens.
Do you, when you finish a job, when you're in the middle of a project, do you actively think about, you know what, this would be good for edit, this would be good for coverage, I'm going to reach out to the magazines? Do you think that way?
I don't do that. I'm.
Why don't you do that?
Super shy.
Wait, what?
I know. It's. I just. There's some things I'm comfortable with, and some things I'm not. I probably sabotage myself a lot in that respect, but I'm not very good at reaching out and saying, you know, hey, come look at this. I prefer for things to be discovered, or, you know, have a publicist do it. But I'm not that comfortable in that role.
So it's really interesting to me to hear you say this, because, you know, when you and I first met, you were working on a design house. I believe mm-hmm. it was Waddell's Mansion.
Yes.
So you're out there, and you're, is it by accident?
A big part of it is me being in this industry for so long and really being an introvert and working comfortably alone and saying to myself, okay, you really have got to go out into the world and meet people, and because it's really scary for me. And that, you know, I was on Ellen's Design Challenge, which that was sort of the pinnacle of this whole thing, is I got invited to do that. And my two daughters looked at me and said, if you don't do this, then everything that you've said to us about being scared and walking through your fear is just a lie, Mom. Like, you have to go and you have to do this. So letting myself go onto Ellen's, what the thought, doesn't get scarier than that, really, to be filmed. I'm much more comfortable talking to people now because I've been putting myself out there a lot. The showcase houses, you know, 20 years ago, you would have had to scrape me off the floor. Like, there was just no way. I just wasn't, I couldn't. I am shy. I am.
I find this is fascinating.
But I'm a Gemini, so okay. I have very distinct parts of my personality.
It's funny. You know what's really interesting? I shouldn't be surprised by this, because this conversation that we're having now, it's you're very, the industry, you're in the same place that a lot of other creatives that I speak with are, and I'm just surprised by it. And I'm surprised by it because isn't that a big part of the brand development, pushing your brand and getting more work? Because listen, I hear a lot, where do you get new clients from? Oh, well, word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Okay, first of all, and I say this, I probably have this conversation at least two or three times a week. There is no such thing as word of mouth. If somebody gives you a recommendation or tells someone else, the person who did it still found you somewhere.
Yeah.
Originally, yeah. You had to be somewhere
yeah.
for someone to see your work. Otherwise, yeah. you're in an echo chamber. It's a vacuum. There is no word of mouth. You had to be somewhere. So residual marketing, mm-hmm. word of mouth is basically residual marketing. It's somebody who had worked with you or knew somebody who worked with you who now makes a recommendation to somebody else.
And you were findable.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Most designers, architects, creative in the interior space, exterior space as well, don't advertise.
Yeah.
Advertising is not a big part of what creatives in the industry do. Do you advertise?
No.
No.
No. I did early on when I started the furniture studio. I started it right about the time that Dwell was coming to life, and it was a really good fit for me, and people would hold on to the magazine for a long time. So it that was advertising that I did that was really valuable, because I had people contact me, you know, 5 years later. So I did in the beginning, really, when I was starting the furniture part of it, but not so much as an interiors person. That really has been people find you through other people, or they go into a space that you've seen, or they talk to someone. A lot of my work also comes through my design studio. It's almost like the furniture can be a gateway to a larger project. Somebody might come in for a console or a couch, and it's almost like it's the design process, but it's much smaller and it's much less committed than doing an entire house. So you have an opportunity to see if you work well together. And very, very often people want to do more. They'll turn it into an entire room, and then from a room they go and perhaps purchase a house, and you get invited in to do it that way, which I sort of prefer. I think there's probably nothing scarier than somebody just calling you and saying, I've seen your work, can you come in for an interview and come and do my house? It's so personal to do someone's house or to do somebody's space. I don't really understand how that would work. You know, I've been lucky enough to be able to cultivate relationships with my clients and keep them for a long time as they move houses and move spaces. So I'm sort of intrigued and perplexed by how people would just kind of do a turnkey space for someone that they've never really had a relationship with before.
Because it is so personal.
It is so personal. It is. And how would you do that? Like, I don't know if I would become, if I invited somebody in to do my home, my space, I don't think that there's any way that I could truly convey what my habits are or what my needs are and have that person understand it and design accordingly. But that's just me. There's clearly a whole demographic of people that are doing it successfully.
Absolutely. How do you find new clients? And is it primarily the store? Is it, and word of mouth, when you're around long enough, word of mouth is something,
yeah.
But there's also an ebb and a flow to that.
I've been in the industry a very long time. Been in the industry since the 80s.
Yeah.
It's other designers that maybe they think that you're appropriate for a job. Maybe they're out of the country. People seeing your work in magazines, people seeing your work at a showcase house, people talking to other people. So many different ways. But there's Instagram and all the social media sites now, which we didn't have, you know, even 20 years ago.
Yeah, and that was my next question, is how do you find the time? Let me back up a second. So I did this sort of down and dirty audit. I've been talking to a lot of designers and a lot of architects for a long time.
Audits are typically down and dirty.
I know, right? But I did this basic time audit for the space. It's like, okay, you've got the current jobs that you're working on. You've got the projects that you're pitching. You've got communications with clients from those jobs, from the new jobs, the proposals, the boards. You've got the clients that are not active that you mm-hmm. still need to have communications
Engage.
With.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got to work the projects that you're working, and from that, you've got to order product, source product.
It's an impossible task, and when you even put it like that, it's honestly, and raising two kids, it's one foot in front of the other. Like, you're just doing what needs to be done at that moment, but you have a clear agenda for the day, and then boom, 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 you got to hit every beat.
So that's absolutely right. So at the end of this audit, here's what I came up with based on communications with literally dozens and dozens, hundreds of creatives over the past 5 years,
mm-hmm.
is the average creative here in Los Angeles,
is
between all the work
out of his mind
and all the traffic
yeah.
and all the
yeah.
things that you have to deal with, people don't realize how much time you spent in the car
in
just
traffic.
Going to places.
Yeah.
So all the things that you're doing, you're spending 110% of the time that you have allocated for your business on your business, which means that on average, that's not the people who are doing it ineffectively who are spending more time than they should, but you're taking 10% of the time that you have allocated for family, friends, other things, and you're spending it on work. That's on average. That is before you factor in something that most designers, architects, most creatives in the industry do not do, and that is to market, self-promote, mm-hmm. advertise, or develop new business in that fashion.
Of that is being done simultaneously. I mean, when you're working a project, you're meeting people, you're meeting other contractors, you're meeting staff. All of those people have voices, and they all become a network as well, right? So there's one part of marketing where you sit down and you say, okay, I'm going to advertise this, or I'm going to set aside a block of time to do that. It's all of the other stuff that's happening in your day-to-day. I mean, I'm here with you. I've just met other people. Who knows where that leads? So there are all of those different interactions over the course of the day that have the potential to turn into something, right? You can meet somebody in the elevator and say, what do you do? I'm a designer. Oh, how interesting. My neighbors are looking. So my father used to say, if you are not playing on the basketball court, if you're on the sidelines, what are you doing? You're dribbling. You're using all of your opportune moments to further your...
And it's funny, too, because I'm working with West Edge Design Fair again this mm-hmm. year, and part of our programming and presentation is going to be about making the most and identifying the moment.
Yeah.
As it relates to brand development. So you're absolutely right. Your dad is absolutely right as well.
Yeah, he was right in a lot of things.
So back to Ellen's Design Challenge. Hmm. How did you wind up on that show, and what was the experience like?
I actually just got an email. It was the strangest thing. I had been toying with the idea of not doing the furniture anymore because I have been so split between doing interior design and doing furniture. And I was thinking, well, maybe it's time for me to put the furniture aside. You know, my kids were littler. My kids are now 18 and 16, so this is 5 years ago. There's so many demands on a person's schedule, and I was thinking, what can I cut out? So I was thinking about not doing the furniture anymore, which hurt my heart, but I thought maybe it's a necessity because interior design takes up an enormous amount of time between, you know, sourcing, meeting with clients, doing the production. I do a lot of custom work, and so you're doing site checks and it's an impossible amount of work, like any kind of production. I was sitting and I was doing homework with my daughter. My older daughter. I was checking email. I was throwing email out of the junk file because that's what you should be doing when you're supervising your daughter's homework, because you should be checking your email. And there was one little email that came in, and I quickly deleted it. And then something in my brain said, oh, you know what? You should go and look at that again. And it was a casting company. So I read it and didn't think anything too much of it. I mean, it's like getting the weird email from Nigeria or whatever, but something in it made me go back to it. And I thought, this is legit. This is really weird, because they said that they were watching my furniture. You know, they knew my furniture. They knew my line. They knew me. They had been watching me a long time, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at it, and I delved into it a little bit more, and I just filled out the questionnaire. Something told me to fill it, and I filled it out in like 5-10 minutes, didn't think too much about it, just blasted through it. And I got a call the next day, and they said, we need you to do a Skype interview. Like, you're just crazy. And so I was at a paint store. So it was all very spontaneous, and it took, honestly, about 4 or 5 months to be vetted for that show. They didn't tell us it was Ellen. It was just a furniture show. We want to see your process. We want to see something that goes from, you know, the seed in your brain to a tangible product. And we want to see what the steps are. That's what I had been doing for 20 years. And that was my passion. I was like, okay, I can do that. And we just went through all these different interviews, and then I found out it was Ellen DeGeneres. And knowing that Ellen is so involved and invested in really beautiful furniture and architecture, and got invited to be one of the participants. So it was one of six. Yeah.
And what was the experience like on set with Ellen, with the judges? What was the experience like?
Was so bizarre. It was really, really, really strange. It was very weird.
What was the weirdest part of it? And it's interesting, while you're thinking, because Cliff Fung has been on the show.
Yeah, Cliff was the judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember...
I think Cliff is one of the people that threw me out, actually, which is like... Thanks, buddy.
Well, no, and it's interesting because I had Cliff.
That was fun.
I had Cliff on the podcast. See, yeah, it's sore subject.
He's so nice.
I shouldn't have brought
it
up.
He's the nicest person in the world.
He is, and yeah. that was one of the things. Is you know, and I think the video is still up on our YouTube channel. You know, hearing him, he was tormented by the process. You know, knowing
really?
That these are creatives.
Yeah,
I'm a judge now. I'm not just a peer. I'm not just a.
I don't think I could do it, Josh. I don't think so. I think what the weirdest part was watching your time, right? Like 14-hour days, whatever they were. They were so exhausting, and to watch it be encapsulated into a 30-second. Thing where you're like, that's really not how that went. You know, there was so much good stuff that went on, but I was sort of portrayed as the, you know, the bossy, the sassy. And so it was just weird. It was, you know, it was reality TV.
Isn't it funny too? Because, you know, you say, this is what's really interesting. So we're in LA. And it's very easy for you to say, you know, it was reality TV.
I can say that now after 5 years, and I have a lot of distance from it. But if you had talked to me 3 months after,
no, I totally get it.
My heart hurt a lot.
I believe that.
A lot.
I believe that. And that's part of it. That's, by the way, that's part of this.
Yeah. It was brutal. It was brutal. Because I worked hard, and the pieces that I did were really good. And... they show a certain way on TV, but you know what you've put in any project that you do. And, you know, these were projects on steroids, right? You had days that the sets were crazy. These were people getting to know each other for the first time. There's no learning curve. Producers are getting to know the contestants. Contestants are getting to know the set. I'm not a TV person. None of us were. Well, the Carpenters were TV people. So that was also kind of weird, is that the Carpenters were like, they were ready for it. They knew that when that camera was on, they kind of, you know, turned on. They knew what to do.
Who was your guy? Who was your...
I had a Carpenter named David.
Okay. Do you like David?
Yeah, David's fine.
Would you? Moving on. So
I also... had a Carpenter behind the scenes named Tige O'Neill, who has become one of my dearest friends and a colleague. A lot of people don't know this, but there's lots of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, so many things are edited, but Tige was, he was like a superhero. He was just amazing. I had another Carpenter, I think his name was like Santini or something like that. These people, they worked tirelessly, so professionally, and they were kind, you know. I think that's the biggest thing, is that there's a real difference in people that are kind and people that are not kind. And when you find kind people, it's helpful, particularly in a situation like that. And I have actually, in all fairness, stayed in touch with some of the producers and people from the show. I actually was invited in to do the design work for one of the producers. So it was a wonderful experience. It was strange, but it was a wonderful experience.
And what's interesting to me is hearing you talk about it 5 years later. You can tell that the feelings, I'm not sorry to be bringing them up. I'm almost sorry, but
yeah, I wasn't really prepared to talk about Ellen's design challenge.
Yeah,
that's
no,
okay.
No, it's it, all right. Okay, because, and here's where I want to go with it. Has that shaped, because again, you're this apprehensive star. You do remarkable work.
Thank you.
You do interiors, you do exteriors, you do furniture. You are a true creative from top to bottom. You are crafting work from nothing, from ideas, and you're also using other people's work to craft spaces.
Yeah.
And it's hard for many creatives to put themselves out there because it's so personal.
It's really difficult for, I think for creatives, yeah, because you get myopic with your work. You know, you're an artist, essentially. I remember being at my studio, and I'd be there, and I would be doing the work, and I remember one day in particular, a client of mine, he just dropped by. he's like, hey, you know, just, and I nearly came up, like, you know, sweating, and it sounds so stupid, but the introvert in me, I was so in my universe, I was not prepared to engage this person. You know, you got to kind of turn on, and I think, and he's so nice, and he's such an introvert. I've known him forever. I've done several houses for him, but I think he felt like, whoa, Leslie, I'm so sorry, you know, to make you so uncomfortable. Yeah, creatives are like that. We're wacky.
Well, okay, granted, I'll give you that. But at the same time, and by the way, I consider myself in the same category.
Yeah.
I know what it's like. Yeah. And to be creating something, it's really interesting because you'll have clients, you'll have people that you work with all the time who'll be like, hey, you know, I was in the neighborhood, thought I'd drop by, see what you're... It's like, okay,
I like it a lot more now. I'm a lot more comfortable.
Fair
with
enough.
It.
Yeah. And by the way, that goes back to the original question and the original concept. It's funny because every time I sit down with you for one of these, I mean, the last time we spoke was probably two and a half years ago at Waddle's, but it was interesting too. I remember the conversation then kind of took a dog leg left, and this is one of those things where, you know, it's very interesting to me because you are so open with your feelings about this. And because brand development is so important, I want to back up a second.
Yep.
So with regard to the furniture, do you treat the furniture side of the business differently than you treat your design side of the business?
No.
It's exactly the same.
On a smaller level.
Do you market the furniture side?
Well, I have the storefront, so it sort of sells itself.
Does
I put
it?
Furniture
Do you get
into...
big walk-up there?
Mm-mm. No, but the people that make it in are pretty serious. By the time that they've made it in, they kind of know what they want, and they're ready to sit down and engage with me. The furniture that I have is not inexpensive, so I'm not one of those that sells, you know, 100,000 pieces here. I mean, it's timeless furniture. It's exacting furniture. It's signed and dated. And the people that are willing to invest in it are willing to wait for it. They're willing to collaborate on it, and they get a piece that 20 years, 30 years, 35 years, really, really beautiful pieces. So I make smaller batches to fewer people, but there's a huge amount of satisfaction with it. Much more. I never wanted to just, not putting down the furniture business, but it was more than the bottom line for me. It was furniture as art. It was, let's make you this piece. Let's get you the piece that you really, really want. Almost like doing interior design. But instead of a room or a house, we would do a table or a chair. And I know that the people are going to live with it and interact with it on a daily basis and get something from it.
What is your sense of the industry At least, you know, the industry is going to be different no matter where
it's
you are.
It's changed so much.
It
just
has.
Well, because the generations are different. I'm perplexed and in total awe of this new generation of people. Just they're kind of detached to product, which there's no judgment about that, but it's just they live a completely different lifestyle, you know. People kind of float from place to place where they work, or they buy online, which to me is like crazy. How do you not, if you are buying something for a client, how do you not road test it? How do you not see what's inside? How do you not see the back of it? How do you push a button and buy something? But that's how they do it. So, and it seems to be working, I guess.
It certainly is a new way of shopping.
It's a new way of shopping.
Yeah.
And they're fine with it.
So your sense of style right now. I want to start with color. Because when this episode comes out, we will be right around the time when the paint companies are starting to roll out their color of the year.
Okay.
For next year.
Right.
I always think this is a fun process.
Okay.
I think sometimes they get it,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they just completely whiff.
Mm.
But it's fun to start talking about it in, you know, October, November.
Right.
Color palette for next year. Any thoughts?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Okay. Do you have a color palette that you find more appealing? And I don't want to say by year, because you can't really do color by year. Right.
All I know is that in the 80s, I was really into taupe and gray. That's about all I can tell you, which has made a comeback.
It has.
Yeah. Yeah. What goes around comes around.
Are you crushing on any colors in particular right now?
I always crush on green. You know, green is just my go-to. I love green. There's something about it. I just have always liked green. I've always liked orange. I like all colors equally. That's it.
Any trends that you're seeing develop right now that you like, or any that you wish would go away? And by the way, while you're thinking, I think it's really interesting. I love asking these questions, because what designers will always tell me is what they're seeing ground level.
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing ground level
mm-hmm.
is going to be what most people are looking at eye level in 12 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always interesting to me, and it's been spot on for the last 5 years. It's been spot on. You're looking for inspiration?
Mm.
Leslie's looking around the room.
I tend to kind of put my blinders on with things like that. I get overwhelmed by stuff and by product and by kind of what's out there. And so for me, in order to stay focused, I just close my eyes and kind of listen to what I'm told.
What's going on the inside voice? You're listening to the inside voice.
I just always like a clean, minimal palette. You know, I mean, I do. And I think it's because I have so many crazy monkeys going on inside my head that are just making way too much noise, that when it all comes out, I like serenity. I just like, I am drawn to things that are quiet. And because I can do the maximalist thing, but you will see the insides of my mind, like, just, it's crazy. It's too exhausting for me.
I get that.
So I don't do it a lot. Like, at the first Waddles, I did two Waddles showcases, and the first one was a teeny tiny room, and I packed it with a lot of stuff. Didn't photograph very well, because you just don't get it. It's one of those things, you have to be in the room to understand it and to feel it. And it was fabulous. It was just packed with plants and with furniture and with different things, so I can do that. But I also find it a little bit not calming. So I tend to just like things that are calmer.
How many projects do you think you work on a year?
Oh, well, if interior architecture projects, I shouldn't take on more than two. That's asking too much. Sometimes I'll go to three, but I'm stretched so thin doing that because I've also got the studio. So I'm smart when I leave it to no more than two.
Full projects.
Mm.
And then do you pick up? You'll pick up a small room or two project here or there.
Yeah. If a client needs something, if a client needs a kitchen, or a client is, you know, moving to a new house and says, "Can you do some quick space planning for me while I do this?" I don't ever like to say no to people that have been long-term clients. So, and frequently that, you know, they'll call you and they've moved or they've gotten another space and they need something. And so you make yourself available to that. But I'm getting older and I'm a little tired, to be perfectly honest. So, I've been a working mom for a long time. My older girl is going to college now. So the chapter is kind of changing and I have an opportunity to slow down. I don't even know what that was until now. I just kept going. I opened up the studio and I never looked back. And now I'm looking at it, I'm like, God, I worked like stupid hard. You know, it's ridiculous. And then you realize that you're really, really tired and you need to go to Spain for a little while.
And you know what? You bring up a very good point. The you have to unplug.
You got to unplug. And I didn't unplug for a very long time.
Would you have changed that if you had it to do over again?
Yes.
You would?
Unquestionably.
If you had a chance to do a design TV show again, would you do it again?
Depends on who it's for.
Okay. You would approach it differently?
Yes.
Yeah. Design houses. Do you still like the concept of design houses?
I do. They're fun.
Yeah.
They're quick. They're fast-paced. They're quick. Meet a lot of people. That's one of the nicest things about the design houses is that you get to meet your design comrades, which, again, if you're working in your studio, you meet your contractors. You're sort of in your day-to-day dealing with your contractors, your subs, your clients. You don't get or furniture vendors, you don't get a huge opportunity to meet your comrades. And that was one of the nicest things about doing the design houses, is to tap into all of those people that are doing the same thing that you do, but in a slightly different way. So I have kept in touch with most of the people. You know, you learn something from them. They are there if you need a resource. Very different than it used to be. People are a lot more open to sharing resources. People were not like that a while back. It was harder to get resources for, you know, you just share information. Yeah. So it's kind of a buddy system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was great. Leslie, thanks for the time.
Thank you, Josh.
I love catching up with you today.
That's sweet.
It's been too long.
It's what, 2 years?
Yeah.
But I guess it feels like longer.
Thank you very much.
No, it's always nice.
Yeah.
It's always nice.
And the showroom is?
The showroom is at 409 South Fairfax. Mm-hmm. I'm just below Farmers Market and the Grove.
All right.
I've been there forever in a day. I got it in 98 when people were like, Fairfax, what are you doing on Fairfax? And I said, yeah, I got it for a song and I need a space to show people what I do. And it's a great location.
It's an up-and-comer. It's not an up-and-comer. It's a come. It's
been there. I have been there for 20 years.
And from the from a design standpoint, the industry actually came to you.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I could see, you know, when I was going out and I was working with architects and I would go shopping for product and it was very difficult to find product that was just quiet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was like, I love this table, but can we lose all the finish or all the carving? You know, I wanted to just kind of edit the pieces. And being a lover of furniture, I just decided, screw it, I'll just make it. And so I started making it, and there was a need for it. And so I immediately got sort of developed a niche with architects and like-minded people who wanted things for their projects that fit without being too flamboyant. You know, not everything in a room can be saucy.
Right.
You've got to have stuff that just works.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're going to show a couple of pieces. I'm going to get some pictures from you. We're going to show a couple of pieces on our YouTube channel.
Convo by Design is proud to be working with Vendome Furniture. Design culture, it's the key to their success. It's what pushes them to consistently create new collections that give spaces a new dimension. They create dialogue between environment and form. Vendome pieces can transform the simplest space into one filled with glamour that is both unique and extraordinary. And isn't that what design is all about? Creating atmospheres where you can take hold of life and enjoy it to the fullest? Vendome products are simple and elegant, contemporary and exceptionally comfortable. Their crafted, modern, durable, molded resin, glass, and metal designs are unique and they beg to be enjoyed. They search the planet for the right designers that embody the Vendome spirit and work together to create remarkable pieces into an exclusively Vendome mode of expression. And if you haven't seen Vendome before, you can check them out in some of the Convo by Design videos you'll find on our YouTube channel. But you can find them in their showrooms at the D&D Building in New York, Wynwood in Miami, and the Pacific Design Center here in LA, or online at Vendome.com.